Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. If you're just getting started on your investing journey, it can be a challenge navigating the market, knowing what's right, what's wrong, who to trust, what to know, all that stuff. It can be an even bigger challenge for new immigrants to Canada because there's a lot of stuff that we take for granted that, you know, like a 22-year-old's going to know just by osmosis because they've been here, you know, their whole lives, that someone who is newly arrived may not understand or have been exposed to. Enoch Omalulu is a personal finance expert, the founder of Savvy New Canadians, and someone who knows a lot about all this stuff, both from his website and from his lived experience. He's in Winnipeg, Manitoba today. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
Thank you for joining us. I want to see if you can give us some sense for the difference between a Canadian, born, lived here their entire lives, but new to investing, and someone who is new to Canada. Maybe that's a year, maybe it's longer or shorter. What are the differences for those two overly simplified demographic groups?
Yeah, so I think a few things that come to mind when you think about new Canadians who are new to investing in Canada is just the lack of familiarity with Canadian investment accounts. So for example, I sometimes see newcomers who are starting to invest and they start off with a non-registered account when their TFSA and RRSP accounts remain unused because they are simply unaware of these accounts or they are not familiar with the tax advantages that they offer. That's one that actually comes to mind right off the bat.
Yeah. I'm going to dig into that in a second, but are there others that are top of mind for you?
Something else would be just defaulting to the brokerage at the bank where they first opened their bank account, because sometimes these banks offer like newcomer packages, and then you open your bank account, it's easier for you to get a credit card without Canadian credit history. And then when they start thinking about investing, they sometimes by default also go with the brokerage at these banks. And these are not necessarily the best accounts to use when you have a small account because you're paying trading fees for every trade you're placing if you have a self-directed account. So that is something else I see is people sometimes don't shop around, look for cheaper options to invest. And sometimes by extension, they may default to a high fee mutual fund at the same bank, which is better than not investing at all. Don't get me wrong, like using a high fee brokerage or high fee mutual fund is much better than not investing at all, but it is not necessarily the most efficient way to invest as a beginner.
I can imagine one of the reasons why this happens is it can be very difficult for a newcomer to determine who to trust. I know just when I moved to the United States, like, I don't know, I spoke the language, the culture was familiar to me, but I didn't know the brands of the financial institutions because they were different and I didn't have a sense for it. Here in Canada, we've got the big banks, we've got credit unions, then we've got a whole bunch of fintech players. What advice would you have to new Canadians on determining the brands or the companies that they could trust that would be outside of the ones that, you know, advertise the most and that may have helped them with a bank account when they arrived here first?
Yeah, I think these days, just by searching for the best investment account, the best no-fee investing apps, just keywords like that, just searching for that, you get tons of resources that give you an overview of what's available. So I guess thinking outside the box and just going outside of what would be considered your comfort zone a bit can help you save on costs over time. Mind you, when people first start off, for example, when they're thinking about opening a bank account, I advise to go with the big banks just because it's easier to get familiarized with the Canadian banking system that way. You can walk into a branch, speak to somebody if you have a pressing issue and not get frustrated over the phone. But once you sort of settle in 6 months, 1 year, it's time to start reaching outside your comfort zone to look at what the options are out there.
Many immigrants come from English-speaking countries. Many immigrants do not come from English-speaking countries, and there is an enormous range in terms of their language skills, in particular, probably those first couple of years. So if we take investing versus all the other banking things like a savings account, but investing, What expectation could a new immigrant have in terms of their ability to be served in their language of choice?
That's interesting because I think I've come across a few online platforms that do offer opportunities to speak to somebody who can speak in your language. So they have like this list of languages that you can potentially get support in. But I've also received lots of complaints from people who are just like, you know what? They told me this. This is what I thought they were saying, but actually this is what they meant. So there is still that gap when it comes to finding support in your language outside of the English language, especially when it comes to understanding complex matters, which investing is in a large part. So people either misunderstand what is being said, or they think someone is saying something else, and then they do something else, and then there's a complaint that, you know what, I wouldn't have invested in this mutual fund, for example, if I understood that it is meant for this, or it acts this way, or there's this risk to mutual funds, for example. I've had people say, oh, I thought it was risk-free. I thought it was like putting money in a GIC, but it could be just lapses in that understanding when it comes to technical terms, because it's very different when you speak English as a first language or as something you grew up with all of your life, and compared to when it's something you learned as a second language and you're now dealing with specific complex issues.
We started by talking about the different types of accounts that you can use to invest. It could be a non-registered account. It could be a tax-free savings account. It could be an RRSP for folks with kids. It could be an RESP, as an example. Take the case that you are talking to a new immigrant who doesn't have a background in those four things, as I described. How would you define them for them?
So I would say for the TFSA, this is an account that you can use for investing in several assets and for any purpose. So if you are thinking about investing, say for the short term, you're thinking about investing towards a wedding, for example, in 3-5 years time, or towards some financial goal in 3-5 years time, this is an account you can use. If you're thinking about investing even for retirement, so 10 years, 15 years, 20, 30 years out in the future, you can use a TFS. It's very versatile. And while you invest, putting funds that are already taxed by the government, any returns you earn will not be taxed. So you're earning tax-free returns for life. Now, compare that to the RRSP, the Registered Retirement Savings Plan. This is designed for retirement planning specifically. So if you're thinking about, oh, I want to save for 3 to 5 years, in 3 to 5 years time, I want to be able to access these funds for something outside of retirement, it's probably not your best bet to start off with. When you think about Registered Retirement Savings Plan, you're thinking retirement. Retirement income to complement your government benefits. And then when you think about the RESP is you thinking right into the future for your kids, and helping them offset the high cost of education in Canada. So post-secondary education. You want them to take on less student debt. You want to assist them with paying for tuition. The RESP helps you do that. You can invest, again, across a wide variety of investment assets. And the government helps you with that investment by matching your contributions with 20 cents on every dollar up to a maximum per year. So invest in that. And then when your kids are in post-secondary education, they can withdraw those funds. While they will pay taxes, if at all, it's going to be at their own low tax rates. So this is an account that is really deferring taxes into the future, but they will probably pay little to no taxes at all on it.
And all that to say, I mean, you defined those three accounts very, very clearly. A non-registered account wouldn't come into play until you'd really done some serious investing, or savings at least, and maybe investing inside those three others because of the benefits that you've mentioned. We just got a minute or so to go, but I want to ask you one last question. When we use the phrase new Canadian or immigrant, it encompasses the broadest range of circumstances imaginable, from someone who, you know, is fleeing strife in their home country and arriving with a shirt on their back, to someone who is coming with significant assets that, you know, they arrive as a a real player and an ability to buy assets immediately. So really a broad range. What advice would you have for a new immigrant, regardless of those circumstances, in terms of assessing their own practical and psychological tolerance for risk?
Yeah, so I think risk and return relationship is very important to consider when you're investing. One question I would say ask yourself is, how soon do I need these funds? If I need the funds in 6 months' time, 1 year's time, maybe even 2 years' time, you want to keep it in, you want to invest or keep the funds in an asset or in an account that is almost risk-free. So you're thinking savings account, a guaranteed investment certificate account, an account that is not going to lose your principal, essentially. If you're thinking about investing for, say, something that's going to occur in 10 years' time, for example, so your retirement, then you may want to consider taking on some risk so as to potentially increase the returns you generate on that investment. But then you have to ask yourself the question alongside that, which is, if the market tumbles, say, 30%, am I comfortable with waiting for the markets to recover, which may take years, it may take months? If you aren't, then the other question to ask yourself is, what is my goal? Do I actually want to grow this amount, or do I want to just protect the principal? Those are questions you're going to ask yourself, and that you would be taking a questionnaire on if you decide to invest at all in the financial market. So to assess your risk tolerance, you're asking yourself, how much risk am I willing to take, in the sense of, if this value drops, can I stomach the loss? Can I wait long enough for this assets to recover? If not, maybe I should be thinking conservatively and keeping my funds in a protected account, insured account, like a savings account.
Very, very helpful context. Enoch, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Enoch Omalulu is the founder of Savvy New Canadians. If you haven't checked out this website, you really should, because it's got tons of perspective on personal finance in general, but also answers questions that are specific to folks who have arrived in Canada more recently.